When everyone is on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the From the Shadows podcast. I am your host, Shane Grove. Flying solo again tonight. Jason could not be with me. Before we get started with the episode, I just want to remind everybody that if you do have a experience you'd like to share with us, you can get a hold of us on our Facebook pages, the From the Shadows podcast page, or our forum page, After the Shadows, on Facebook. You can find me at Shane Grove Author on Instagram, or our From the Shadows podcast Instagram page, or go to the website and just hit the contact button. I get the emails off of there, which is I believe how I got our tonight's guest. So before we bring him on, though, I do want to mention a really cool book that I was sent by probably one of our few two-time guests, Mark Muncy from Florida, who's just awesome. If you guys are big fans of the show, you'll remember the couple episodes he's done. He's just Mr. Folklore, Mr. Ghost Stories. He's awesome. And him and Kerry Schultz wrote this book and sent it to me called Eerie Appalachia. Eerie Appalachia, The Smiling Man, Indrid Cold, The Jersey Devil, The Legend of Mothman, and more. So, I mean, I read it from cover to cover, which I know is probably a surprise to everybody that I can read, but I did. I read it from cover to cover, and it was a really easy read as far as the stories were very compelling. It's a lot of folklore from the Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, Pennsylvania kind of area there. A lot of cool stuff. And there's some really cool, I mean, I know Mark and Kerry did a lot of research on this. And there is a super cool tie-in between a UFO sighting in Florida, crash in West Virginia, and Indrid Cold, who paranormal fans may know is a central figure in the Mothman, the Mothman hysteria or whatever you want to call it that took place. But Indrid Cold is kind of a central figure in that. So, you know, Mark did a lot of great research. Kerry did a lot of great illustrations. So I would urge you guys to go out if you want something cool to read, or it's a cool gift for somebody that you know that's into the paranormal, to get Eerie Appalachia. I think you can get it at Amazon, or probably, I think Mark has a website. Just search Mark Muncy and you can probably buy it directly off the website. So there's my plug for Mark. So hopefully he'll send me the next book that he does. and he doesn't wait around so many years to get it done because he's a great author. So with that shameless plug for Mark, I'm going to bring in our guest who, like I said, sent me an email about some stuff here in the Buckeye State in Ohio. Eric, welcome to the From the Shadows podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Shane. It's an honor to be on here.
Well, we'll probably have to edit that part out where he says an honor because then people are going to think I'm going to plug something for you.
No, I don't have anything out there. No, nothing like that at all.
Well, Eric, okay. So before we get into some of the paranormal stuff that you kind of alluded to me that you wanted to share, let's talk about what happened a couple weeks ago in Ohio here, and just, you know, tell what happened, and we'll let everybody kind of make their own assumptions of what it might be. But, you know, I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And I've heard, this is not the first year something like this has happened. It happened last year as well. But I work at a Boy Scout camp outside Conesville, Ohio, which is really close to Coshocton, Ohio, which, if you're familiar with that area, it's basically a hop, skip, and a jump from Shawnee, that area, if you will. Basically in Salt Fork, actually it's closer, but a couple weeks ago, our camp every year, we do a different theme, if you will. So like this year's theme was Halloween. So, you know, so we did some things throughout the week, and on Thursday night we did it's basically like a trick or treat kind of thing, where the scouts would go around to different campsites and dressed up and get candy and stuff like that. Well, one of the guys I work with, who is also on staff with me, decided that he was in the military. He had a ghillie suit, and he walked around in his ghillie suit for probably an hour or two, just being goofy and doing, you know, just thinking the scouts, he was a Bigfoot, I guess. I don't know, because, you know, a big guy in a ghillie suit, you know, what's the first thing that's going to pop into your head? Well, so, but anyway, later that night, we had what was called an outpost for the scouts who are looking to earn what's called Wilderness Survival Merit Badge, where they do basically camping without tents and stuff like that. And in the area where these scouts were, and I'm not for sure on how many trees there were, but I heard in the neighborhood of at least 3 to 5 trees came down around these scouts. And then another 1 or 2 fell in a different part of camp. And Shane, the night was beautiful. I mean, when I heard it the next day, I went, what? I mean, because it was a beautiful moonlit night, still as can be, no wind whatsoever. And with anywhere from 3 to 7 trees coming down in one night at a camp with nothing of that going on, you know, take it for what it's worth. I mean, it's kind of weird, you know, and I guess it happened a couple of times last year where a couple trees just came down. And I've got over 30 years of camping experience. I've never heard a tree come down ever. So, I mean, take it for what it's worth, I guess.
Beavers? You guys got beavers?
We do have beavers, but five to seven trees in one night?
Well, they do call them busy beavers.
I guess something.
No, I think I know what you're saying. I get what you're saying. Is for somebody that's out there in the woods and teaching survival skills and stuff, I mean, you know, that's odd. Just have many trees just fall over.
And I've been out.
There's no wind going on.
Yeah, and I've been out, you know, camping before in different areas of the state, and I've heard like coyotes, and then all of a sudden you hear something way off in the distance, but you're like, it, you know, you can't equate it to anything, because, you know, and that was a thing last year. I knew, because where I was going was kind of a Coshocton County. I know there's been some things on TV and stuff about Sasquatch and everything. I had to stop listening to you and Wes, because it was freaking me out. Like, everywhere I went, I was thinking it was Sasquatch. I'm like, oh my God, you know, so I had to stop listening for that summer just so I could get through the summer without, you know, having a heart attack. So.
Well, I apologize.
No, you're fine.
And on behalf of Wes, I apologize.
No, it's
fine. He might even hear this and feel sorry, but not for very long.
No, I understand.
He'll feel sorry. No, yeah, I could listen. I could understand. Yeah, and that you listen to eyewitnesses come on, and you hear about their experiences, and then everything is like, "What's that? What was that?
Yeah,
what was that?
Yeah." But and that can be the same way in the paranormal field too, you know. And we can talk. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But yeah, it's just your senses are on, you know, are on such a heightened level. You don't know what's going on, and you think, you know, everything you see or hear is paranormal. So
well I'm curious. So what did the kids think anything of it?
No, not per se. I mentioned it. I'm like, Sasquatch? Bigfoot? And then I just kind of got some raised eyebrows, and I'm like, look, dude, they've been known to push trees down. And I mean, and you may not even know that they're right in front of you. So, I mean, I'm not saying it was, but I'm not saying it wasn't either. So take it for what it's worth.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of a, you know, from listening to eyewitnesses, that's kind of a, an activity that they do to kind of show that they're in the area and like, hey,
well, and it was an odd enough experience with all those trees coming down. If I'm not mistaken, they did pull those scouts out and bring them back into camp, main camp. So, I mean, it was enough of a point to bring them back in. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, so it was a significant amount. So, like I said, yeah, but it wasn't a storm either. I just don't get it.
Yeah. And that, you know, that area down there is well known for, mm-hmm. For activity for sure. Right. Even like we were talking before we came on air, there's some lady from that area just recorded, what sounds like a couple Bigfoots howling at each other. So from this last weekend. So I don't know. That's a very squatch area. Thus why they hold the Bigfoot conference at Salt Fork.
So. Yes, that's exactly. I've never been, but I'd like to go someday maybe. So.
So we'll get off the Bigfoot topic.
Sure.
Because I am interested in some of your paranormal background, especially because it seems like you've probably been at that for a long time. So
yeah.
So go ahead and let's
share
a couple.
Well, I'll get into my history a little bit. You know, I'm in my mid-40s, late 40s now, and you know, I grew up with Haunted Ohio, those books from the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And I grew up with, you know, a couple of monster books. And actually, you know, in my email to you about the recent show, I remember reading some of those stories, and it freaked me out, primarily like Mothman. You know, I'm a fifth grader when I read a book about monsters, and I'm scared to death. So I never sleep with my windows open anymore, you know, for that, you know, from probably the fifth through seventh grade, I didn't sleep with my windows open because I thought a Mothman was going to fly in. But needless to say, I read the Haunted Ohio books, and I heard, you know, a couple ghost stories from my family. And one of the most weird ones, and I don't ever suggest using a Ouija board ever with a group or without, because they're nothing but bad news from everything I've heard and heard experience of. But my mother, when she was a young child, she's now about 70. She was probably in her early teens. She was using a Ouija board by herself, reportedly. And she asked the normal questions that, you know, girls would ask, am I going to get married and blah, 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 and those kind of things. Well, she asked who she was going to marry. And the pointer allegedly pointed to the initials T-A-B. And my mom didn't know anybody with those initials. And lo and behold, 5 to 7 years later, she married my father, Terry Allen Brown. So, I mean, so that kind of, you know, sparked my interest in it. And then, you know, fast forward to the early 2000s, a little known show that nobody has ever heard of took the air, and that was called Ghost Hunters, with the Atlantic Paranormal Society, or TAPS. I'm obviously joking about that. It was probably kicked off the whole ghost hunting phenomena, if you will.
Kind of kicked off all of this stuff.
Yeah, to a certain extent, it did. Yeah. I started watching the first couple of seasons, and I was just curious. I'm like, you know, I was doing some news stories too. It was around Halloween, because I was a reporter for a long time, and I'm like, you know, and I heard something from somebody about TAPS having like a family, if you will, of paranormal groups that they have in their fold, that they are, quote, and I use this term extremely loosely, so hopefully you won't get a ton of email on this, but they're considered experts in their area. And so I contacted one of the groups that was a TAPS family member, and it's still, we kind of took a hiatus. I eventually took that group over. I joined it and eventually took it over. And since probably about 2017, we haven't been as nearly as active as I had hoped. I went through a divorce and all this other stuff. So I, you know, everything kind of took a back seat to that and my kids. So, I ran what was, and it's still active. You can find it on Facebook. It's, Para X, which it's Para, it stands for Paranormal Experience. So Para X Research Foundation. And from probably the early 2000s through the mid to late teens, we were the number one TAPS family group in Ohio. So, and I had at one point 12 to 14 investigators, and I'm not joking, Shane, we would have, for, it was like 2008 through 2013 when the show was still going on. I think it went away in 14 or 15. I can't remember, but things kind of dropped off after that. But I had two groups, and we were doing investigations at least these two groups once a month for almost 2 years, 2 to 3 years. So I'd have, you know, anywhere from 3 to 7 people out every, you know, every month doing different places around the state of Ohio. And, you know, obviously once TAPS went, or Ghost Hunters went off the air, things died down, and we would get things from people who were, you know, who are fans of Ghost Hunters, and they'd say, hey, I'm having an experience, email them. And then they would send it out to us. And those kind of dried up after Ghost Hunters went off the air. But during my tenure with, as you know, part of the team, as well as the technical leader of the group, called an executive director, I had probably a good 6 or 7 different instances where something weird happened. And you know, I'll start with probably the most memorable. But one was at Dayton's Memorial Hall. A lot of these, you got to remember, these are late 2008, 2009, 2010 through the early teens. So we're in at that, it was right before, I think it was before the Dayton Dragons came into existence. So,
well, the minor league baseball.
Yeah, the Dayton Dragons baseball team, right around in there, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, we were contacted to come in and do an investigation because they had some paranormal activity. And one of the things I always did, and I don't know why I did it, was recreate the scene from Ghostbusters where Venkman goes into Dana Barrett's house and does the piano thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Why not? I don't know why you're apologizing for that.
Well, every time I did that, I'd go in and I was like, oh,
this drives them crazy.
I hit the 2 or 3 keys and this drives them crazy. And that was during our initial run through the building. We would take a tour of the quote unquote hotspots. So I did that just goofing around, just to lighten the mood a little bit. And, a little bit later, we went, as we would call it, lights out, which was shutting off all the lights, and we started going doing our investigation. So later in the evening, it was probably midnight to 1, I can't remember, another guy and myself, who was also named Eric, were in that general vicinity of that room. It was like a ballet-type practice room, and we were just outside that room, and we heard like ding ding ding, which was the piano keys going off. So it sounded like the same keys that I had messed with. They went, you know, ding ding ding, and then it just stopped. And then we heard Eric plain as day, both of us. We looked at each other and say, "What?" And we went looking. There was nobody in any of the building where we were. Nobody. So, I mean, that in itself was really weird. I mean, those two things happened.
I hate to laugh, but all I can imagine is a ghost looking at another ghost going, "They hate this." Doing that and then calling your name out. "They hate this."
Yeah, it was
holy moly. And you stayed in there? And you
We stayed there for a while. We had to. We were doing more things. And then we were getting closer towards wrapping it up. And I don't know why, as paranormal investigators, we do this. It's all across the board. Almost every paranormal group does this. We decide to do the paranormal investigations in the middle of the night. I mean, with the lights out and stuff like that. I mean, you can just as easily do them during the day. I mean, maybe you'll get more with cameras, but other than that, audio, which is 95% of the stuff we would catch, would be, you know, that could happen during the day. But the weird thing that happened to one of the guys who was like our technical advisor, he was walking across the main stage at the Memorial Hall, and all the lights above were off. Okay. Well, and just the basic outside, I don't know what you call them, but basically the outside lights that light up the stage were on. And as he was walking across the stage, and I saw this happen right under center stage, and those lights come on as a system. Like when you turn one on, it turns a lot of them on at the same time. One of them, just one of them, shined right on him, and then it went out. And we tried to replicate that. We couldn't do it. And it that was another weird experience. So,
wow. Okay. That would,
yeah.
Okay.
So
that would not freak you out or anything, would it?
No, I mean, absolutely not. So those are the biggest instances at Memorial Hall. We've done a bunch of different places around the state. We did also, and it's become kind of a tourist attraction now. But I was one of the first group. We were one of the first groups in to go to the Licking County Jail, which is in Newark, Ohio. I was good friends with the commissioners there at that time. And I think one of the commissioners is still there, but they had us come in and do an investigation. And I'll be honest with you, Shane, again, I've done, I don't know how many investigations over the course of my career, if you will. I'd never had anything really interact with me, like pushing me or anything like that, except for two times. And one was at the Licking County Jail. There was only two of us who could make it that night. And it was my co-director at the time. And she was in she was on the same level, but in a different jail cell. And I was in a jail cell by myself, like facing out with nothing behind me, and something pushed me. I felt it. It there was a light push against the left shoulder, and that was it.
Were you trying to verbally like interact with something at that time?
No. I was just standing there. We had gone through with EMF detectors and a lot of times we would not do what's called provoking, calling, you know, "Hey, you know, I don't believe there's anything here," kind of thing. That's, you know, just trying to get that. They're not like a light switch where you can turn it on and they'll just say, "Poof, here I am." It's not like that. So, but sometimes if you do say something, it could tick them off where they could, you know, possibly show themselves, but we weren't doing that. We were just there. And throughout a couple different places, we also had phantom smells where you've probably heard other people talk about, they smell lilac or some kind of perfume thing. And I think my associate director smelled like a lilac perfume, and we were the only ones there at that time. She smelled it, and I was in another room on that level, and I smelled cigarette smoke. Now, we're also big into debunking things. I kind of chalked that up because at that time, if I'm not mistaken, they had a lot of the old records in the jail. And, you know, these records are from, you know, the 20th century, you know, from the 30s, 40s, 50s on up. And what did people typically do when they were working during that time? They'd be smoking. Yeah. So I kind of chalked it up to it was possibly I was getting some remnants of that. So I didn't really put too much into it. But the lilac or whatever the perfume was that my associate director smelled, we kind of took that into consideration. Those are really the only big instances at the Licking County Jail that happened. We had an instance where we were doing, I can't remember the exact name of it, but I don't want to say the name of the museum, but it was a museum up in northwestern Ohio. And it has been known to have some paranormal activity. And we had instances of something running on us. And what I mean by that is, again, one of the things we use is called an EMF detector. And, you know, we would be asking questions and, you know, the EMF detector, which monitors electromagnetic fields and whatnot, that's typically how you can get something to interact with you. If you ask a question, it generates enough electromagnetic field where it makes a sound. Okay. For those of you who don't know what that means. But anyway, we would be asking questions and it answer. And then all of a sudden it stopped. And we were on the second floor, I think we were, in one of the rooms. And then all of a sudden, you know, within 5 minutes, we heard something in the attic, like kind of bump around. So we went up in the attic with our EMF detectors and started asking questions. And it responded back that it was the same entity that we were talking to down on the second floor. Now, who that was, I don't know. I mean, but that's what we call running, is they would be in one area, something they ask a question they don't necessarily like, and they take off. And, you know, you try and go find them, I guess, for lack of a better term. So, I mean, I've had several instances of that happening in different places around the state. But that's probably the biggest place I could remember that it happened.
I've never heard that of coming into contact with the spirit in one place and then coming into contact with it again somewhere else, having it identify
right.
itself like that.
Yeah,
that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and there were different terms for the kind of apparitions, ghosts, whatever you want to call them. There was the residual ones, which they're on like a schedule where they do the same thing over and over. It's clockwork. That's kind of, and then there's what's called intelligence, which would be that kind of a classification, as well as the ones that said my name at Memorial Hall, where they're cognizant of what's going on and essentially do something about it. So, have those theories changed since I am no longer really active? It could have been, but you know, I really don't watch, you know, ghost hunters or anything like that anymore. But at that time, that was the best consensus we would come to, is that they were intelligent and taking off. So we did that. We also did, I don't know if you remember, I think you're about my age. You ever hear the Emmett House down in Waverly?
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Mm, I feel like I should.
It was a big hotel and restaurant. I think the biggest claim to fame was it was like Brent Musburger's favorite place to come eat when he would do Ohio State games down in Waverly.
That's the best place he could find.
Okay. Well, I mean, it had good food, but I don't know, you know. But that was one of the bigger things it was known for. It was one of the nicer places to eat in the city of Waverly, which is about an hour south of Columbus. Well, it burned down in 2014. Well, we were there in fall of 2013, if I'm not mistaken, and there was a show on at that time called The Haunted Collector. And I don't know if you remember that show at all or not, but basically the premise was, and this is very typical too, where an entity will attach themselves to something. Okay. That they were, you know, like, you know, if it was a carpenter and he loved a specific hammer and he passed away, because he used it his entire life, he would be quote unquote bound to this object. I mean, that's one of the theories that people would use all the time too. But that's what the guys would do. They'd find some artifact wherever they went and then put it under a glass dome, like at the end of the show, and say, this will never be out in the public's eyes again or something like that. Cause a lot of times they were saying it was like negative energy and stuff like that. Well, we went down there and I don't think anything really big happened that night. All I remember it, and it was, oh, by the way, this was also a place that was a stop on the Underground Railroad. So that could have been why there was a lot of activity there too. Yeah. But we didn't experience anything. But the reason I brought up the paranormal show is they had one room sectioned off and they wouldn't let us in that room because they were going to be filming in that room within the month. So they wouldn't let us go into that specific room. And lo and behold, guess where they found the whatever item it was that they used on the show? In that room. So that's why I'm like, we all watched it because we heard about it. We just said, this is a bunch of bunk. I mean, it is purely entertainment value because we didn't have anything happen. Like some of the stuff they said was happening. I'm like, when? I mean, where could this have happened? And they were quoting places, if I'm not mistaken, that they didn't even report paranormal stuff going on. I mean, to us when we were there. So anytime you see that stuff on TV, you got to use take it with a grain of salt. I mean, because like I said, it's entertainment value. So, but I can't remember exactly what it was, but that show wasn't on very much longer, but yeah. So, I mean, some of those, that's one of the shows I couldn't really watch anyway, because it just, a lot of the stuff was really outlandish.
Well, it's kind of a difficult premise to keep going.
Yes.
You know, that you're going to keep fighting this stuff. I mean, I've lived a long time and been a lot of places. I don't think I've ever run into any particular item that's been haunted.
Yeah. Well, you know, so. Yeah. And one of the things that, you know, talking about that real quickly, one of the as a bucket list investigation list, if I had one, would be the Air Force Museum in Dayton, because it's reportedly haunted as all get out. They can't keep keep night guards. There was an instance of a lady who was walking by an airplane called the Strawberry Bitch, which was a World War II bomber plane.
Oh gosh, not the lady, the plane.
The plane.
Okay.
The plane was called Strawberry Bitch. Yes. And I'm just using it as the name. That's what they called it. But anyway, from this woman, she was in front of the plane and the machine gun started going click, 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 click.
Whoa, what?
So, yeah. So I've always wanted to go through with just a recorder and walk through and ask questions. I never have got the chance to do it. But yeah, a lot of stuff happens over there because the same thing, a lot of those parts that they take, they would take bastardized parts from these planes that crashed or whatever and put them in the floor models on the floor.
Oh, to rebuild something. Stuff. Okay.
So yeah. It could have been a machine gun from another airplane for all we know. And maybe the gunner was still attached to it. I don't know.
But I got to be honest, that trumps some ghost playing a piano and calling out your name.
Well, I didn't see it. I mean, that's just a report. I think it's in one of the Haunted Ohio books, if I'm not mistaken. Oh my gosh.
But that would be pretty freaky to be like this ghost is trying to kill me. Right.
Yeah.
They're trying to shoot me, got me in the sight.
Yeah. I would be like that scene out of Forrest Gump where he's being chased and all of a sudden he breaks those thing, breaks his leg irons off and he runs down the road and all you see is a trail of dust. I'm a big fat guy. It would be exactly like that. I'd be gone. Something like that happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like down at Wright Patterson, there's a lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of freaky stuff, if you listen to those people who have instances of knowing things going on at Wright Pat. I've had some people who allegedly had high level clearance and said, yeah, there's some stuff that I can't tell you about, but yeah, there's some stuff going on there. But then, I don't know how long you want me to go, but
you got time.
Okay, I just didn't want to go too long because like we talked about before we started, I'm like a lawnmower full of gas. You pull the cord, I'll go forever. Another one we did a dentist office in Dayton. And our rule was, and this is a rule that I kind of put into place when I took over. The rule was, A, if it was a business, you had to have the owner of the property's permission to be there. That was the first thing. And secondly, one of the people who made the claim that something was going on had to be there that night while we were there. Mainly that was for just purposes to, cover our rear ends, because if something ended up going missing while we were there or going up, claiming that it was gone after we left, we could say, nope, they were there. Nothing. They were there with us wherever we were. So they can't say, well, we tried to steal something or something along that lines. But we went to this dentist office and I was told that we had permission to be there from the people in the dentist office. Well, turns out the dentist office was part of a complex and they had the dentist's permission to be there, but we didn't have the building owner's permission to be there. But so we shut down after that. The owners found out about it and called us out on it. But what I'm getting to is, in this dentist office, there were a couple of businesses, and there was one business that they could never keep, one of the offices they could never keep anything in, that was always empty. And there was, at that time, there was a big, if I'm not mistaken, a copier that was right around in that area. And the dentist office would go up there and use that copier a lot. Well, there was a lady who said she was sensitive. And what that means is they can, possibly see some kind of apparitions or, that kind of thing. We never really used those people per se, but since she was there, we opted to use her. And she said that she felt really weird in that particular area, and especially going down the hallway towards that office. And every time she said she'd go up there, she'd feel like she was like something wanted to kill her. So I went up there, and being the stupid guy I am, that's where I got permission to provoke, and I provoked. Now, nothing happened to me per se, but she was with me and she said, I can feel the rage in this thing and it wants to strangle you. Like it wants to kill you dead. So I don't know what it was, if it was anything at all. I'm sure there are people out there who are, who have some psychic ability, if you want, or are sensitive. But a lot of times when people say they are, they're really not. There's been a whole industry built around that. Look at Miss Cleo, for example, back in when we were kids, and she'd come online and talk about the psychic hotline. So that, there was another instance of another TV show called Most Haunted, which was a British show. And actually that, along with Ghost Hunters, kind of spearheaded the whole movement. They used a psychic all the time, and his name was Derek Acora. And how they busted him was the producer fed him a bunch of baloney, and they went to this location and he was regurgitating the baloney back to the producer. So, and this guy had been on for like five seasons. And that's how they finally realized this guy was a sham. So that's why we never really use those type of people who are sensitive, because you don't know if they're giving you the truth or not. So, yeah. I mean, so, but like I said, this entity allegedly wanted to throttle me, I guess. So, I mean,
another happy,
customer. Dentist, yes.
Customer from the dentist office. I mean, I can imagine there'd be a lot of ghosts that would be very angry having to hang around a dentist office.
Yeah. Well, and you know, was it associated with a dentist office? Who knows? You know, if you've listened to enough people and, you know, you have enough people report, hey, they have some kind of paranormal experience, 9 times out of 10, the person will say, oh, we live over an Indian burial ground, or we live close to a graveyard, or live close to an Indian burial ground, or something like that. And I'm like, we're in Ohio. Just about everywhere is an Indian burial ground of some sort, it feels like. So, I mean, so yes, in theory that can be, but I live right across the street from a funeral home in Zanesville, and I've never had I've lived here for about 5 years. I've never had any kind of net weird experience. So, I mean,
move across the street maybe, and you know,
well, you never know. Actually, we live close, right down the block is another funeral home. So,
jeez.
So
the high rent district.
Yeah, evidently. Yeah. Well, so
when you talked about the smoke, smelling the smoke, and now funeral homes, it reminds me of a ghost. Well, I shouldn't say ghost, but an experience I had once. My dad passed away. Wow, 96, 97. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, my dad smoked, but he never did it around us, if that makes sense.
Yes. Okay,
he wouldn't, because I was allergic to it and stuff. So, but you could smell. I mean, I wasn't an idiot. I might be now, but I wasn't back then. And I could smell, I could smell like,
sure,
that he smoked. I don't know what brand it was. I don't know any of that stuff. So my dad ends up, he's 49, dies of a heart attack. The next week, obviously we had calling hours, and then we had the funeral the next day. And so as we're standing there, all of us, it was my aunt, and my uncle, my grandparents, my wife at the time and stuff. We're all standing there around the casket, and I'm in the back because I'm the tallest, so I just stood in the back so I could see her. And as the preacher, we're kind of like, everybody else is out getting ready, mm-hmm. getting the cars to go to the cemetery. And I start smelling smoke. And I smell it, and I look over at my then wife, and I'm like, do you smell that? And she kind of looks, and she smells. She goes, smoke? And I go, yeah. And so I'm like, whoa, that's kind of crazy. I'm thinking, well, I'm going to go check outside because it's right by a window. Like, where people, mm-hmm. I go outside. There's no cigarette ashes. There's no cigarette butts. I don't smell any smoke out there. Then I start thinking, well, maybe it was in his clothes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But then I started thinking, I was by his casket for 6 hours during calling hours and never smelled smoke. And so when I told my uncle and my grandparents that, because I'm like, I'm going to tell them. And they're just like, wow, maybe it was his way of saying, okay, everything's okay. I'm taking off,
Yeah.
I was just flabbergasted.
Like, well, and I had, my dad passed away earlier this year, and he smoked like a chimney his entire life. And, I've been out of the house, for over 25 years, but he still smoked. And, I know he did. And I'll tell you what, Shane, every once in a while, I catch a whiff of smoke. Now, my mom lives with me now, too, but it's on, like, I'll just smell it out of nowhere. And I'm like, what is that? Because I don't smoke. I mean, so, and neither does my girlfriend. I'm like, that is just weird.
Like, you're wondering, like, it's either one of two things, probably. Either he's stopping by to check everything out.
Could be.
Or Maybe it's something that your mom has that is remnants of that. But you would think that stuff would, you know, close or whatever.
Well, and you make a good point. And again, I've talked about sensitivity and stuff like that. But my girlfriend's grandmother, passed away in early May. And she was a well-known poet, or not a well-known, but she was a published poet. And she did some other things that only people, her family would know. So her sister went to a psychic, like a psychic show, I guess, like a, you know, like some fair or something like that. I don't know where it was at. Doesn't matter. But she went there. And one of the things that Jennifer felt that she was connecting with to get over the, go through the grieving process was journaling. And, you know, writing about her experiences with her grandmother and stuff like that. Well, her sister went to this psychic thing, and the psychic connected with what I guess could be her grandmother, and she was repeating stuff back to her sister that only her family would know, including the fact that she is happy that Jennifer's writing down her thoughts.
Okay.
Isn't that crazy?
That's weird. It is. And I don't know what.
I mean, how can it be stuff that. Now, again, you know, you've probably seen the things where people can disprove psychics, but on this case, I'm like, whoa. I mean, like I said, I know there are some people out there who, when they do an interaction with the public, and I can't remember his name, but he was a really well-known psychic. He was a younger guy. He was on TV. I don't think he's on anymore, but he'd be in this big room with all these people, and he'd do readings, for lack of a better term. And he gets like somebody talking to him in an area, and he'd start asking questions in that area, and people would say, yes, that I had a relative by that last name or something like that. And he'd say, okay. And they'd start talking. He'd quiet them and say, no, well, hold on a second. And he would repeat that stuff back to them that only they would know. So he didn't know it. So he could prove his legitimacy, if you will, that he was actually interacting with the paranormal. So, I mean, there are some people who are like that. Sixth sense, I guess, but it's weird how some people can do that. I mean,
one of the Sonia, the psychic that we had on from Cleveland. I mean, her stuff was just amazing.
Yeah.
To the point where I will never forget this. Okay. I think we're going to turn this into a t-shirt, but she goes, one of you's naked or not wearing some clothes. And I'm like, well, I'm fully clothed. I go, Jason. And he just goes, yeah, I'm not wearing a shirt.
I'm
like, what?
Whoa.
What are you talking? And it wasn't like July or anything when we were talking to her. And, you know, we don't have any video. And I'm like,
oh my.
And I'm like, first of all, dude, why are you recording shirtless? This doesn't make any sense. And he to this day, that just blew his mind that she's like, yeah, what, Jason, are you not wearing a shirt? Or what are you, yeah, I'm not wearing a shirt. Like, oh my gosh. Like, what a random thing to guess. To think that we would be sitting there.
That is completely off the wall.
I know Jason very well, and I wouldn't suspect him to be on the other line, not wearing a shirt, talking to me. Needless to say, not being professional, it's just kind of weird. I think there's a lot of legitimacy to some people having a gift.
And
however they receive.
You just have to be very careful. Be very careful. Let them do the talking, I guess, is that. But I got one more story for you. Then I think I've yapped long enough, if you will.
What do you got?
Last one was, and it was probably we were very hesitant on calling anything haunted, because you know the connotation is there. I mean, when you say you live in a haunted house. I mean, but the, from the stuff that we were told before we went in, kind of had our anxiety a little high. It was a mansion in Marble Cliff, which is a very, very fancy part of Columbus. It's not very big, but it was a million-dollar home. And so we went there, and the nanny had told us, and the biggest reason we did it is because anytime you had something going on with children where they were feeling terrorized, or we always made that a priority to go there to try and figure out what was going on, if anything. And one of the things she had told us before we went in is A, it was like a carriage house where they were at. And a young family lived there, and two of the girls died in and around the home. I don't know exactly what the instances of where that happened, but the report we got from the nanny was that the boy, and he was an only child, he had like a mounted fish that he had caught like in Florida on vacation with his dad or something. And one day they were sitting down in the living room or something like this. Nobody was around, but they heard like a racket going on coming from the boy's room. And they went up there, and off the wall and down the hall was this mounted fish. And I don't know how big it was. I don't think it was like gigantic, like a marlin or anything, but it was a decent size, like a dolphin, you know, the fish dolphin, the one you can mm-hmm. eat, but, or a mahi-mahi. It was something along that line, about that size. So it was a decent size plaque that came off the wall and came down the hall. And the boy was with them when this all happened. So, I mean, so it wasn't somebody playing a joke on him. Something happened. And another thing that had happened was the mother said that she was in her room by herself. And I don't know if it was an orb or an apparition. I can't remember exactly for sure, but she was laying in bed and she saw something come out of the ceiling down and then out of the room. I mean, like a black mist or something along that line. She saw it come down and then go out of the room. So, you know, obviously, so we knew this going in. So one of the first things we did was we did an EMF sweep and all this other stuff to see if there's any outlets that could have been making her think that something like this was happening, for lack of a better term. But we were using those EMF detectors, and mine was really sensitive. I mean, the littlest thing could set it off, and we were using another one that wasn't as sensitive. And we sat it in the middle of the room, not near any outlets, but we started asking questions. And then after about a minute or two, it started going off, both of them at the same time. And they were interacting with us for about 5 minutes. Like, are you the little girl, one of the little girls that lived here? It'd go off. You know, did you die violently? Which I think they did, but I can't remember exactly how. Like, they weren't murdered or anything. They like fell out of a horse carriage or something like that. Something along those lines. I can't remember for sure. But, you know, and we'd ask them these questions, and it would interact with us for a while. And then it eventually just stopped. So we kept trying to get it to ask questions, and we couldn't get any more out of it. So we left the recorder. We left the EMF detectors in the room along with a recorder. And we also had another recorder in the foyer, which was a spiral staircase. So about that time, we went down into the kitchen, which was off the foyer, and we were talking, no children in the house, but we were talking and, you know, talking about some of the weird stuff that was going on in the house. And when I went back to review the evidence, both of those recorders were mine, so I listened to them. The one upstairs where the EMF detectors were going off went off for about both of them consistently, went off for approximately 60 to 90 seconds, like one constant tone. And again, it was not any electrical outlet. It was, they were both going off, making the beeping noise. So something was evidently there. So, but we didn't have a camera in that room because at that time our camera was really goofy. So, I mean, but we had nothing other than the audio to back it up to say, yes, there was something going on in this room, what it was, but I didn't hear anybody come in. I didn't hear anybody go out of the room. So typically you can hear it because it echoed all the way through the foyer. So, but that was the one instance with that. But the other one that was in the foyer and was on the stairs, and this is no joke, I can remember it like it was yesterday. I went back and I listened to it, and I heard a little girl's voice go, "Mommy, mommy, mommy," went off three times. I about peed myself. I mean, that is so creepy. And unfortunately, I went back and I tried to get my old computer up and running, and it wouldn't go. I think it was where it was at, but I tried just trying to find it, and I couldn't get it to work. But I'm like, so I could have some proof that I heard this stuff. But I mean, it freaked me out. And when I went to reveal it to the family, it freaked them out. So I don't think they lived in the house very much longer after that because of all that stuff that went on. So,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, that was the weirdest thing, you know? So.
And we were just, what's funny is we were just down in Columbus and Grandview Heights.
Which is real close to Marble Cliff. Yeah.
Real close. You know, as we were driving around to where we're going, we're looking at all those big old houses. I'm like, that'd be like one of these neighborhoods I'd like to live in. And then I hear a story like that, and I'm like, I'm not sure I can live in one of those old houses.
Well, and our house is a historic house. I think, I can't remember, the owner of the electric company in Zanesville lived here, I guess, in the early 20th century. So it's an old house. They had some renovations going on in our kitchen, you know, about 5 years ago. And I'm as sensitive as a stick. And I mean, I've never had any weird feelings or anything, and neither of the kids. My kids don't want to go in the basement, but I think that's typical for any kid. They don't really want to go in the basement. One of them lives down there, but yeah. So, but I'm like, you know,
they just don't want you down there.
Right. Well, that could be
saying, well, it's haunted down here. You don't.
Yeah. He's never said anything like that. It's a finished basement, but I think it really just depends. I mean, what instances lead to this? I don't know. It'd be interesting to try and figure that. But I think, you know, sometimes if you do have a traumatic event that happens, you're more likely to have, you know, a quote unquote haunted experience or haunted place. But again, it's subjective. What is traumatic? Mm-hmm. Is somebody being murdered traumatic? Yes. Is somebody having a stroke like my dad did? You know,
and is it traumatic enough for him to you know,
haunt? I don't know. I mean, I smell smoke every once in a while, so I'm like, I don't smoke. So who knows? So
that's interesting. I look, I appreciate you coming on and sharing those stories, especially the mommy. I mean, you saved the best one for last.
Yeah.
Because that got my attention real quick.
Well, I should have started with that then.
No, that was a great one to end up with. I think everybody's like, everybody that's out there was driving, like really listening when you said that. Like, I think I'm not going to claim responsibility for an accident. Maybe at least one person spilled some coffee.
Maybe. Well, hopefully they don't sue you for it either.
Well, they can sue me all they want. There's nothing to get. But Eric, hey, thank you. So, hey, I'm glad you reached out and we got an episode out of this. I'm glad. I mean, some interesting stuff. I love to hear the, like the anecdotal Bigfoot stuff, because I have said it before. I think that stuff really helps fill in the picture of what is going, what, you know, that there's stuff going on out there.
Right.
It just isn't like you come face to face with something, that there is stuff that's happening that, people should pay attention to, and you never know what else you might find, for sure. Right. So if anything else happens out there, if a scout gets kidnapped, or I don't want to say
let's not go down that road.
But you know, so if anything else happens out there, I'd love to hear about it. So
right.
And thanks for sharing some ghost stories. We always love ghost stories, especially ones from Ohio.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you so much, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time, never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out.
'Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.